The year that I'm in has the potential to be one of the greatest ever in game preservation. Discs are flying into the Internet Archive. Gigabytes, terabytes of data. Magazine cover CDs, personal compilations, shareware compilations, and professional CDs throughout the lifetime of the medium. People are uploading zip files that have extremely innocuous names and turn out to be one-of-a-kind, precious data that you would otherwise never even dream still existed. More than a few times in the past few months, people have gone from feeling like something will never be found to having somebody comment and say, "Oh, is this what you were looking for?" These miracles are not going to stop, and I wanted to take a few moments to think about all the ramifications of that. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Peter Healy, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. There's a lot of stuff that I do, and frankly a lot of stuff that other people do, that could be defined as, you're visiting, but I live here. My daily job is to swim through thousands of daily uploads, get rid of spam and malware, but also consider what's being added, check it for quality, and give it a collection of its own, or share a collection of many, many similar items that others have uploaded over the years. As a result, I also have a story that plays out over and over again, where somebody heard about the Internet Archive, taught themselves the best way to upload any of the items they have, and they've just been going at it. All of their items are unclassified, and I look at them and say, how did we miss this? And I'll realize they've only been at it for 4 days. They'll upload a few dozen scanned newsletters of some obscure subject, or they'll have imaged a range of CDs from a different country that I would have never found looking around online. They'll scan the label, the packaging, the instruction booklets. They'll put it all up in a pretty bow, sometimes with a lot of description, and do it dozens of times to no applause and nobody knowing about it. I brought to light a little while ago somebody who had uploaded hundreds of Sudanese bootlegs, Sudanese pop music, cassettes that had been made anywhere in the last 30 or 40 years, and told people that this thing existed, and immediately had a lot of interest from people that I promise you did not give much thought to Sudanese cassette bootlegs minutes before. This is happening all the time. It's that serendipity of not knowing you wanted something until you saw it was all out there for you to see. But technically, my job is software curator. That means I go through the open collections that are being uploaded to, try to find themes or types of items that folks are uploading, and then find collections for them. I found somebody who had uploaded thousands of Windows 3.1 desktop themes. You know, the ability to change everything to the same color and then provide a background and a window theme so that it all looked like you wanted to have something in the theme of Saved by the Bell or My Little Pony or The Goonies. They had been actively uploading these into the collections by the dozens every day until I found what was going on, gave it its own collection, and had to write not only a procedure to move their future uploads there, but have to write the rarest of applications, a Windows desktop theme detector that could go through what other people have uploaded to see if anything else needed to go there as well. Writing weird detectors is one of my favorite things to do. Finding people who had uploaded Flash but didn't know it could be emulated, finding CD imaging, and putting them all into a mega collection of CD-ROMs that I could sort later into what feels sometimes like endless sub-collections. People have uploaded manuals at a rate that is astounding. We've gone past 1 million, and we are on track for 2 million before the end of the year. People are not just uploading latest PDFs, but actually scanning in items from the last 30 or 40 years, and they are not stopping. And then, as I have mentioned before, and which I want to really talk about today, there's the obscure, the weird, the unusual jewels that find themselves up on the archive. You see, software has a story, like all creation. You can look at a book and read it and enjoy it, but you might not know it was written under a pseudonym by a famous author known for a completely different genre. Maybe you don't know that the author died before the book came out and that it was found among their papers. Maybe you can read a book and not realize it was the number one bestseller in 1902. And you won't know, really, if it was hype or the actual good work that gave it that story. It has to stand with you on its own. Or you were sent there and told the story, and you're only reading it because of that meta story, that knowledge that you apply to what's there. And software has this as well. I've said before, there's various types of software out there, and they all need preservation. They all need effort to keep them available and viewable, and if you're lucky, executable. But some of it, like games, kind of do a lot of the heavy lifting themselves. After all, if you make all the effort to make an old game playable, you get a game. You get a fun toy at the end. But what do you do if it's not an attractive, beautiful, audio-visual experience that gives you a little pat on the back at the finish line? What do you do if it's a woodworking driver or an obscure printer driver? How about a compiler that only works on one known platform and there's no other versions of it that do what it does? Business software that doesn't help you anymore and has no function other than to prove that these ideas once existed. Each of these takes as much effort as trying to get an obscure game working again, but there's no live entertainment at the end of the road. An example of this is HBBS. This was written by Matthew Dornquist when he was working around as MiniAppler, and it was his attempt to add a client-server BBS experience in the early 1980s. There had been some ideas about making custom clients that would be given special codes and control mechanisms to do things on the client screen. Attempts to deal with this over the years of the BBS experience were variant. ANSI codes, RipScript, Coconut, each one with its positives and its negatives. But HBBS was one of the first. It was written for the Apple II and allowed you to send high-res imagery over the phone. Now, you had to do it with drawing commands, and it took quite a while for things to be drawn. But it worked. Didn't take off. It didn't become a ubiquitous part of the experience of the Apple II, much less computers at large. But it was there, and it was real. And until very recently, no copies seemed to exist. MiniAppler himself would be asked about it over the years, and he would say, "I think I have it. It might be in a storage box. I'm not sure. I did get some copies out there, but I don't know where those people are either." And I was being contacted by a few people who were on the hunt over the years. And just recently, the person who was looking the longest for it posted about it on a Reddit subboard. People said, "You should talk to Jason Scott." He said, "I have talked to Jason Scott. It's a dead end." And then somebody said, "Oh, I've got it. I'll upload it for you." So they uploaded it, and we have it running at the Internet Archive. It doesn't do much. It gives you a menu, and when you try to set up an actual BBS, it all fails. But the two disk images this person made are functional. You can bring them into an emulator. It is possible, in theory, to have an HBBS living again. That journey was random. The value of it wasn't obvious on its face. It requires me telling you for a few minutes why HBBS is even worthwhile to track down. The name is generic. The whole approach of it is fascinating, but long since set aside in obsolete technology and approaches that we had that were much better over the years. Without this person flying in the face of everything saying that HBBS isn't worth the trouble to find, and having them advocate for it for years, even where the creator didn't have much of an attachment to it, that's what brought it to life. Over the years, not only myself, but others have found source code, either on printouts or in zip files or buried away on tapes, and will make them available. And there's a lot of reaction to it that has a kind of sameness to it. That constant fear that the windows are going to be smashed in and that people are going to find us sitting there with a hot copy of the source code to Leisure Suit Larry. It's not as bad as all that, I can assure you. When I put up the Infocom source code, which a number of people had before me, and I put it on GitHub, it was GitHub itself that came to me and asked, is there any way we can make this work with our beautification routines? They had a system for detecting code and it could make things look much better. It turned out that somebody had written a filter for this source code, and GitHub, to their great credit, had it implemented within 24 hours. That code has been sitting there, read by many, shared by others, starred beyond belief for years now, and I still walk the earth. If you visit that account, which is called Historical Source, you'll find there's a lot more than Infocom there these days. Whenever I find myself being given something particularly special, up it goes, right into GitHub, right into their vault, and right there for anybody else to download. It's stored on the Internet Archive, of course, but it's fun to put it on GitHub and then give the impression that other programmers put down their tools momentarily and all you have to do is take over and improve it for a new generation. To that extent, imagine my surprise when an entire group of enthusiasts of the source code of Infocom, which is called ZIL, started filing bugs against it and coming up with bug fixes for where the code had problems. At some point, Mark Blank, David Lebling, and other Infocom implementers have come to that discussion group, and thematically, they have said, "Really? Is this a good use of your time?" And apparently, it is. In the modern era where code can be modified, manipulated, and checked, bugs that were incredibly obscure and would have taken a tester months to find now just pop up when they run it through the routines. There was a situation where a bag of holding in Zork acted weird, had a randomness aspect to it. We had a great discussion about that. Other times, people would take away hunger and thirst as an option so that if you added an extra command, you no longer had to think about those puzzles, which had long ago fallen out of favor as challenges or fun. The fact that this 40-year-old software could still maintain such a thriving interest in a community tells me that's going to happen with the rest of the code that we find. Among my favorite uploaded items at the archive are gamesourcecode.zip. And you unpack it and realize somebody has built a dragon horde of code pulled from who knows where, placed it there quietly, and run away. I honestly think we're only on the cusp of discovering what is showing up in the world right now that are being uploaded to the archive. I think there's treasures untold. I would love to help people with finding aids, tools for going through what's up there, discovering long dormant CD-ROM images uploaded 5 or 6 years ago that were one-of-a-kind copies handed to somebody on CDR back when that environment was being developed. The numbers are getting out of hand. People used to hand me 600 megabyte images of CD-ROMs long gone. Now they send me 22 terabyte Google Drive links to pull from and copy onto the archive, filled with everything. I mean, everything. I am so excited for what's coming down the road. I know that right now there are people with incredible skills of spelunking through code, metadata, and processes to find things we didn't even know were there. I know there's tools being developed that are very, very general purpose. You give them a file and it almost instantly figures out what it's looking at, tells you that these are old drivers, or shows you graphics buried inside of the archive files and what it all might mean, giving you just the amount of breadcrumbs, the hints, to make a truly jaw-dropping discovery. So while I know doom and gloom sells the papers, gets the clicks, and makes people feel like game preservation and computer software history is in some way faded, rotted, and gone, let me take this moment to say to people, the light has just begun. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Corey Thomas, Emilio Oliveira, Forrest Fuqua, Mark Pilgrim, James Bekoyanu, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Certainly, one of the finest experiences I've had in the past few years is the handing over of source code of games I played in my youth, things that I thought were magical spells inside of colorful boxes that required my quarters and my time, and which I thought I could never understand or glance into, that they would be forever locked from me and just force me to enjoy them from the outside as a player and never truly be given the chance to see what makes them tick. And the fact that I can, the fact that I can see the comments, the thinking, the notes that led to these lifetime-changing experiences for me, that's a gift in computer history you don't even dare to whisper.